As recently as 2008, the U.S. federal government was considered the undisputed national leader in the shift to cloud computing, having issued a government mandate called Cloud First. But we are talking about the government. So, as recently as this month, amid wrangling over the federal budget and a post-election hangover, the government seems to simply have its head in the clouds. I'm Jabalani LaFault, and on today's Central Standard, we're joined by local and national cloud computing experts to tell us about the implications of a move to cloud computing by our government. What will it mean, for instance, in filing our taxes or collecting Social Security? The Government Cloud on live air on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. There was a time when many households, towns, and villages had their own water wells. They were functional but inefficient. But according to former federal chief information officer Vivek Kundra, cloud computing works like a public water system. He said, just like water from the tap in your kitchen, cloud computing services can be turned on or off quickly as needed. He added that when the tap isn't on, not only are you saving water, but you aren't paying for resources you don't currently need. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFault. Today we talk about the government's role in the growth of cloud computing and if cloud computing is as fluid as Vivek Kundra asserts. Joining us now from Virginia is Kevin Jackson, Vice President and General Manager of NJVC Cloud Services. He's author of the book GovCloud 2. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
And we also have And we also have Joe Tierney of Umzuzu, a cloud services company specializing in Google Apps. He's here in our studios in Kansas City. We'll start off with Kevin Jackson. Kevin, give us a definition of cloud computing.
So really, cloud computing is a new method of consuming and delivering information technology. It's really not a new technology, but it's a new business model and economic model that makes it easier to use IT. Your listeners would really relate to that because now you download apps from an app store. You no longer install applications on your computer.
Now, Joe Tierney, along those lines, give us a definition of cloud computing. Facebook, Twitter, all these can be accessed from different handsets or at different workstations. So technically, these are in and of themselves cloud applications too. So give us the nuanced definition of cloud computing.
Sure. I think those are great examples of cloud computing services. I mean, essentially, you think about today, you know, we're hooked up to the internet's global computer grid. We've got these massive information processing plants, these data centers run by these companies. You know, they're pumping data and software into our homes and businesses. As Kevin mentioned, this makes it much easier to consume services, you know, be it for our government agency or at home.
So is it really just the name cloud that kind of gives us this mystical air of what it is?
Well, there's certainly the idea that to name it is to tame it. And we'd like to think that that's true. But the fact is that cloud computing means different things to different people. There are large companies with a lot at stake that want to define cloud computing their way. And many of them are being successful. Some of them are still trying to figure out how to do that. But it's certainly a broad term.
And part of that mystical up-in-the-air term, Kevin Jackson, is why there's been some resistance to slow adoption of cloud computing. Tell us about your book, GovCloud 2. This is a sequel to GovCloud, which dealt with the business of government. Tell us about this sequel.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things about cloud is that the term itself has been overloaded and overused. IT professionals have been using cloud to describe everything from a network to the internet. And when the term cloud computing was first coined, many people equated it to the internet. Since this is really a new business model, it's not a new technology, I thought it would be important to write the book GovCloud because the government, in an unusual move, was taking the lead in pushing its agencies and really the whole economy towards leveraging cloud computing. My first book, GovCloud, was Cloud Computing for the Business of Government, was really meant to emphasize the fact that it wasn't technology, it was a business model. And my second book, GovCloud 2, Implementation and Cloud Brokerage, was really meant to show the way of how not just government agencies, but any complicated enterprise could leverage cloud computing in an effective manner.
You talked about the U.S. government taking a lead. The U.S. government indeed once had what many called a mandate, a cloud-first, quote-unquote, cloud-first strategy. Tell us why that was, and more important, what has happened to this early enthusiasm?
Well, the cloud-first mandate was issued by Vivek Kundra, who was the first federal chief information officer. When President Obama first took office in his first term, one of the biggest focus was to reduce costs and increase efficiency. The culture of the federal government has always been to drive funds back to your home state. So your representatives and senators really wanted to have control of funding. Cloud computing introduced the whole aspect of shared services within information technology, and that gives you more efficiency, hence reduced costs. The Vivek Kundra actually introduced online shared services like data.gov, which many agencies would use to reduce the cost of providing data to the public. USAspending.gov was a way that agencies would report on how they were using the public taxpayer dollars in order to deliver services to constituencies. So these were really this was really a way to force agencies to share information technology resources.
How did these sites, such as apps.gov, that's another one, data.gov, as you mentioned, how did these sites differ from what was already out there? What was the sort of new approach?
The new approach was in forcing agencies to use existing infrastructure. For instance, before cloud computing, if Agency A had storage and Agency B decided it wanted more storage, it would just basically buy the storage regardless of if the first agency had had the capability of supporting the requirements. So you would get less efficiency and more redundancy, which is basically a waste of money. Following the cloud first mandate, the current federal CIO, Steve Rocco, actually issued a shared first mandate, which says an agency cannot build new IT infrastructure unless it is already confirmed that the requirement couldn't be met by an existing IT or existing infrastructure at an agency.
And that brings up an interesting point. In your book, you mentioned the defense and intelligence agency community and the potential benefits of cloud migrations for those particular sectors of government. But how do you identify which government agencies should go to the cloud first and which one should have a slower adoption?
Well, one thing you have to realize that cloud first doesn't necessarily mean a public cloud solution. The intelligence community, for instance, is creating a community cloud. It's a very highly secure cloud infrastructure, but it's shared amongst the intelligence agencies. So you're leveraging the cloud business model and the cloud economic model within a walled garden infrastructure, highly secure, but also highly efficient. So in reality, the decision towards going to cloud has to do with the ability to scale, not necessarily if the information, the requirements of the information.
Talk about the ability to scale. Tell us what that means.
So the whole value of cloud computing for a user is that you only, it's a pay-as-you-go model. It's an approach that allows a user to scale up and scale down what they use based upon their need. When you opened the show, you talked about water as a utility. You buy water by the unit. In cloud computing, you buy IT as a unit. You're going away from the requirement to build a custom platform to an assembly line approach to information technology.
This is Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live in the cloud on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are Kevin Jackson, Vice President and General Manager of NJVC Cloud Services. He's the author of the book GovCloud 2. He's calling in from Virginia. Kansas City, do you still have no idea what cloud computing means? And how many of you do use cloud computing applications or services? Particularly, how do you feel about the government cloud? We'd like to hear from you. If you have questions for our guests or comments on whether you think it's a good idea for a government to deploy such technology, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the cloud. You can also reach us at centralstandard@kcur.org and on Facebook and on Twitter. We also have our in-studio guest, Joe Turney of Umzuzu, a cloud services company specializing in Google apps. Let's bring him back into the discussion. Joe, there are a few local and regional government agencies leveraging cloud computing services now. Tell us about some of them and how they work.
Well, one great example is when the Google Fiber team put out their request for proposal, Kansas City, Missouri submitted their response. They leveraged a Google Doc to do a lot of this. Rick Usher, the assistant city manager, had more than 100 people working on one document simultaneously to submit Kansas City, Missouri's proposal to Google. This just wasn't possible even a few years ago to try to coordinate something like that with 100 other people. So that's one really interesting example and an important one that we can all learn from. Think about the city of Olathe, Kansas, leveraging Google Apps for Government, the city of Mission. We've seen projects in city of St. Louis, city of Columbia, Missouri. Des Moines, Iowa is another good example.
And how do those projects typically work? How does it make it the cloud versus just having an internet site for their government agency?
Sure, that's a good question. I think first and foremost, it depends on what sort of application we're talking about. Typically, the agency needs to take a look at its application portfolio and figure out what applications can we take to the cloud and which ones can't we. Google Apps for Government is primarily what I would call commodity applications. Every government agency and business has them, things like email, instant messaging, video chat, shared calendaring. The difference is instead of purchasing hardware and software licenses and building out this infrastructure, they're able to consume this as a service, as a utility, which is shown to be much cheaper than kind of the way we were doing things previously.
Kevin Jackson, is this how government agencies are using the cloud, at least initially with messaging, email, and shared document type of applications?
Yes, actually, those type of applications are typically referred to as software as a service, where you have a vertical capability like document management that's delivered through a cloud platform. The other aspect or the services that can be delivered to a cloud include platform as a service, which is an infrastructure as a service. When an infrastructure, you are delivering commodity infrastructure service, your storage, network, and virtual machine. One of the most relevant examples of a state government leveraging infrastructure as a service is the state of Texas. Over the past 2 years, they have had a pilot program where they have used a cloud broker in order to deliver commodity infrastructure as a service to state agencies. Within their broker, they have used Amazon, Terramark, Savvis, and other cloud service providers. Platform as a service is really the next tier, where you use middleware that delivers common functionality, and then you would assemble this common, these modular functions into an application that delivers the aforementioned software as a service. The App Engine is a type, App Engine from Google is a type of platform as a service.
This is getting a little bit inside baseball. We have a lot of SaaS, IaaS, platform as a service, PaaS. Let's, for the benefit of our listeners, discuss how the cloud fundamentally changes how the average citizen would process their own information at a government agency site and also get relevant government information that they need. Let's start with Joe and then come back to Kevin. Joe?
Well, sure. I think the most important benefit that can come out of a government agency leveraging cloud computing is transparency. It's much easier for them to identify their costs and manage their costs. It's also much easier for them to share information. It used to be pretty relatively difficult and expensive to stand up a large-scale website that your citizens could not only consume information from, but also submit questions, request feedback, let you know about a pothole or something like that with their smartphone. Now that we have these cloud services, you can scale on demand, you can deliver these services to your citizens on demand, and you can easily share to anybody that has a smartphone or a web browser.
So, for example, a perfect example, if there's a pothole out here on Troost and Cleaver Boulevard, someone could typically, if this service was deployed in the Kansas City, Missouri area, somebody could typically take a photo of that pothole and say, here's where it is, can you fix this, and upload it to a sort of discussion forum or sort of Web 2.0 platform for the government. Is that kind of an example of how a citizen would participate in a cloud?
Sure, program? Absolutely. And I think of how the city would have done this in the past. They would have had to spend a lot of money to try to stand up the service and hope that it worked. With cloud computing, whether it be infrastructure as a service or software as a service, they can quickly stand something up, see if it works well. If it works well, keep going. If it doesn't work well, try something else.
Kevin Jackson, what are some other examples that you've seen cloud computing work well? And some examples, public or private, where maybe jumping into the cloud has left some in the fog?
Well, actually, Vivek Kundra was the chief technology officer for District of Columbia. And he had a limited budget, but he wanted to leverage software to improve constituent services. He actually ran a contest that leveraged the Google platform and had people create applications. In that way, he was able to deliver multiple applications, such as ways of finding a parking space within the city with less money and much quicker. So it was sort of like a crowdsourcing way of enhancing delivery of services by this case, the city government. So collaboration, access to services at a much reduced cost is very important.
Go back to the difference between software as a service and infrastructure as a service. Software is basically the point of processing, and the infrastructure is sort of the back-end system. Talk about the differences between software as a service and infrastructure as a service. We'll come back to Joe Turney.
Well, software as a service is kind of that top level. If you think about the Google.com search engine, Facebook, Twitter, Gmail, these are all software as a service. They're easy to consume by just about anybody. Infrastructure as a service, rather than buying the server software and hardware to run these servers, you can simply turn one on demand from a company like Amazon. It's kind of taking the lead in infrastructure as a service right now. So whatever kind of server you want to spin up, however many you need, you can instantly spin those up and spin those down as needed.
This is hosting and brokerage, as we'll get into later in this hour. Kevin Jackson, a lot of government IT destinations are based on transactions, passport, tax, e-filing, et cetera. How do cloud solutions change the way that's done?
Well, what it actually does is it allows the federal government to only pay for what it uses. Typically, an agency would have to buy hardware, buy software, and then actually hire people to run that IT platform based upon an expectation of use. That led to reduced efficiencies and increased costs. if an agency instead can use infrastructure as a service and only pay for what it uses based upon the need, then it doesn't have to make any long-term commitments and costs. So this saves the agency and saves taxpayers.
Kansas City, how many of you are using cloud computing applications or services? Are you sold on the cloud yet? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. If you have any questions for our guest, Kevin Jackson, the Vice President of NJVC Cloud Services, or Joe Tierney of Umzuzu, a cloud services company here, give us a call once again at 816-235-2888. You can also reach us at centralstandard@kcur.org or on Facebook and Twitter, which we should mention are early iterations of cloud computing applications. One of the benefits, Kevin Jackson, of cloud computing is supposed to be increased efficiency. But does this increased efficiency come at the cost of existing IT jobs, such as system administrator jobs or database administrator jobs or even security administrator jobs within organizations and federal agencies? Talk about that.
Really, what we're running into is an inflection point in the industry, similar to the fact when we changed from mainframes to PCs. It's not that IT is going to go away. It's just the nature of an IT professional will change. Instead of being focused on doing, i.e., how to install an application, how to do patches on an operating system, the IT professional of the future in the cloud world is going to be focused on how to manage services that are being delivered from cloud service providers. So it's not that you need less IT professionals. It's just that those IT professionals will need to change or enhance their skill set.
Here's a tweet from Sean, who tweeted us at KCURCST. He tweets, "Once we switched to cloud email, we started having service outages. Our local staff didn't shrink, so the benefit here is unclear," is what Sean tweets. Joe Tierney, you want to address that? The benefit is unclear.
Sure. I think that's a specific question. So what's causing that downtime is something that you'd obviously want to get a handle on. These services come with service level agreements, just like their on-premise counterparts. So you shouldn't really have downtime. In fact, you should have less downtime. And if you don't, then you need to go ahead and look at, you know, how did we implement cloud computing and what changes do we need to make?
And what's the difference between how a server is managed with, say, an on-premise service plan versus an off-premise or hosted cloud plan?
Sure. Well, I think the important thing is, you know, where are we really getting the value for the organization from? Hosting an email server, for example, is hard work. It takes a lot of time. It takes some of your best people. But you can't really turn around to the organization and say, hey, we're doing a really great job at running your email service. They're like, yeah, no kidding. It's supposed to work. You should be doing a great job. So we can move some of these tasks off to these service providers that specialize this, and these use our best people to work on more strategic projects.
We're talking about the role of government in cloud computing and the implications that follow for the private sector and for average citizens such as you and me. Kansas City, 816-235-2888, if you'd like to join the conversation, like Scott in Olathe. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Good. Joe, Scott Cameron.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
All right. So I wanted to talk to you about the job opportunities, the employment opportunities that arise from cloud computing. There's all kinds of open positions all across the nation, and especially here in the Kansas City area, that we're looking for people to fill the positions, but we just can't find the labor. We can't find the special talents and training needed to fill these positions. They're really hybrid IT roles that require much more in the way of skills than traditional, you would call them, inside IT staff, people who support an internal infrastructure within a big company.
Scott,
I thought I'd let you talk about that.
Let me stop you right there. When you say hybrid IT roles, what do you mean?
Hybrid in that they need a combination of internet skills, being able to hook companies up to the internet, getting them because you are moving things off of your internal infrastructure. You're taking them out of your server room, out of something that you control, and putting them out on the internet. And as a result, you need to make sure that your connection to the internet is super reliable, or else you just did yourself a disservice. So there is a great cost savings and efficiency to moving things to the internet, but that makes your connection to the internet ever more important. And combining the skills of moving those services, migrating from your internal infrastructure, your traditional IT, to the cloud requires many more skills than people who just manage servers and manage software.
And Kevin Jackson out of Virginia, mm-hmm. is that sort of the problem in adoption, creating that sort of hybrid atmosphere in government?
Yes, absolutely. The change with information technology is that actual taking the technology and applying it to a business need or a business process. So the IT professional needs to really understand or have the business knowledge. This requires a broadening of skill sets. You can no longer be successful just by understanding the technical aspects of the platform. You have to not only you have to know what it does and also why it does it, and apply that specifically to the business needs or the business requirements and in the government, the agency's mission. So this is why it becomes it's more difficult in hiring because you need a much broader individual.
Our guests are Kevin Jackson, Vice President and General Manager of NJVC Cloud Services. He's the author of the book GovCloud 2. We also have Joe Turney of Umzuzu, a cloud services company here in the Kansas City metro area. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we talk about how businesses benefit from the government cloud, how cheap is it, and the ever-present concerns over cloud security. Speaking of which, Kansas City, are you concerned about security in the cloud and privacy as well, especially if the government hosts cloud services? We want to hear your thoughts. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also reach us at centralstandard@kcur.org or on Facebook or on Twitter at KCURCST. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Cloud computing. What is it? It's complete gibberish. It's insane. When is this idiocy going to stop? Those are the words once uttered by technology icon Larry Ellison of Oracle until he saw what Microsoft, Google, and Amazon.com were doing in the cloud. We're discussing the role of government in cloud computing and the implementations and far-reaching implications for our society with our guest, Kevin Jackson, Vice President and General Manager of NJVC Cloud Services. He's calling us from Virginia. He's the author of the book GovCloud 2. We also have Joe Tierney of Umzuzu, a cloud services company based here in the Kansas City area. And Kansas City, what are your questions and comments about cloud computing? Are you concerned about security in the cloud and privacy as well, especially if the government hosts cloud services? We want to hear your thoughts. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also post to Facebook or tweet us at KCURCST. Facebook will not be available for commenting, by the way. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dave tweets in at KCURCST. I don't like the cloud. I like having my data on my own computer/network. Then no one can take it away. I think this is a security question. Let's begin with Kevin Jackson. Dave doesn't like the cloud. He thinks he should have his stuff on his own computer or network. That way no one can take it away. Talk about this main concern, Kevin.
Well, the cloud computing is really a transition into a virtual world, and most people really feel comfortable if they can touch and feel things like their laptop. So, but cloud computing in reality uses the exact same security processes and techniques that are used today that have been proven to be successful. The only difference is that it's delivered in a highly automated fashion so that you basically minimize human error in the implementation of security. this is really the main thrust between our own offering in the cloud marketplace. We call it CloudQuity because it's a secure, unified cloud management and control solution so that organizations and government agencies can securely use and leverage the cloud computing model.
Joe Tierney, what are the biggest concerns around security and privacy in the cloud? What are some of the most common concerns you hear?
Well, usually what we hear stems from basically a lack of people learning about how these applications work and operate. Security is certainly extremely important, but if you look at the top cloud computing providers, they're providing a level of security because they're working at a scale much beyond anybody's able to do on their own. Security is not really something that you can do, yes, we're secure and check a box. It's a daily thing you have to do. It's a continuum that requires massive investment. These organizations that provide cloud computing services depend on their security being the best in the world, and they're held accountable for it. So I think anybody who questions cloud security for a particular application needs to go out and look at the specifics. You know, how is the physical security handled? How is the security of the data handled? How are the operations of these data centers run to protect security of company data?
So is it safe to say, Kevin Jackson, that security is sort of a case-by-case basis depending on which cloud you're on or which cloud you're hosting?
Well, when you think about cloud computing and security, let's go on a bit of a time travel. Let's go back in the 1700s when everyone had their money in their mattress. And one day, somebody opened up a bank downtown. Nobody would use that bank because they were afraid that it wasn't secure, that their money would be stolen. After a while, when the first person put their money in the bank and they started getting interest, and the value of using a bank started to be well known, everyone started putting their money in the bank. When come to today, most people leverage the bank, they leverage their devices to have access to the bank, and they feel really comfortable about their money being safe and secure in the bank. Cloud computing is the same way. We're in the early phases of cloud, and people don't understand that cloud is just as secure as having information on their own laptop or desktop. Cloud computing is really about trust. And you have to build trust with your cloud service provider.
Is cloud computing really about trust, Joe Tierney?
I think trust plays a bit of a role. I mean, the fact is that these companies, whether it's a government agency or business, is working with third-party vendors right now to enable security. Whether they're buying software products or hardware products, they're still working with a third-party vendor. So trust is a part of it, but you have to do your homework. You have to know what's the service level agreement. How are these data centers secured? How is my data being secured, whether I'm working in the browser or when it's sitting in the data center somewhere?
We're discussing cloud computing, government cloud computing, and the far-reaching implications that it has here. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 if you'd like to get on our cloud of discussion. Mark in Prairie Village, welcome to Central Standard.
Oh, hi. Thanks very much for having me.
Go ahead.
So I would like to maybe put a little spin on it. This is in regards to the previous caller that said that they can't find local talent. I would actually say that we're entering a new paradigm in terms of like cloud employment, whereby people work. The concept of localness doesn't mean as much as it did traditionally. And unfortunately, a lot of the companies in Kansas City still expect people who are sort of physically located in Kansas City to sort of be held to the price caps of whatever, sort of the larger community says that, you know, you are paid for this skill. But people, I would say that there is the talent out here. I would ask the previous caller what it is that they're trying to pay those people to do in terms of fill that position, because I would say that all of my clients are East and West Coast, mostly because I don't have to, I don't have to be physically located in one particular spot. And so I would say that those hybrid people are out there, and many of them are local, but you have to be able to be willing to pay what people on the coasts are paying, you know, for these kinds of services.
Mark from Prairie Village brings up a very interesting point. When you talk to the average cloud service vendor or cloud service evangelist, they always espouse the cheapness and low cost efficiency of it. But when you talk to maybe an IT procurement specialist or someone in charge of an IT budget in a given government or private sector organization, they seem to believe that it costs a lot. So where's the truth? Is it somewhere in the middle, Kevin Jackson? Then we'll go to Joe Turney.
So one of the things you have to realize that cloud computing is inherently a global industry. So the best talent, so anyone in any physical location can actually reach out and leverage the best talent. That best talent will give you higher efficiency. So per unit, it may cost more, but overall within the business model, it will cost less. It's very important to understand that this is a new business model.
Are there legal or logistical obstacles to overcome for certain government agencies adopting cloud computing, Kevin Jackson?
Yes, absolutely.
What are they?
One of the biggest issues is data sovereignty. Many governments want to ensure that data regarding their constituents remain within the physical boundaries of their country. European Union, for instance, has much stricter privacy laws than even the United States. And Germany requires any data on German citizens to remain physically within their boundaries. The laws around cloud computing really are behind the actual implementation of cloud. But you see this often when new technologies are brought to fore.
It's very interesting that you bring up Germany, because the European Union has said that it will not be adopting cloud services for its government entities just yet. So the jury is still out on how that may affect an international cloud community where government is concerned. Let's go to Sarah in Mission, Kansas. Welcome to Central Standard, Sarah.
Thank you. I just had a quick question about what happens, is sort of a doomsday scenario, if you have massive data loss or corruption within a cloud that supports a government program. Is there insurance available for that? Or I guess I'm just curious on the legal side, what happens to people that are affected by things like that?
That's a very interesting question from Sarah. Shutdowns or loss of data at a government entity with cloud services. Kevin Jackson, take that away.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest things you want to look at when you pick a cloud service provider is continuity of services. What happens if you have a catastrophic failure? Typically, you support that possibility by having multiple copies of your data in physically separate locations, typically three. Cloud computing actually allows you to do that in a more efficient and more effective manner. It's important to note that this is the exact same procedure you would use in a traditional IT infrastructure. You would have multiple copies of the data in physically separated locations.
Is it as simple as using an example of pictures of my sons in the Dropbox that I can add new pictures to that are not technically at a physical location but at a web address that I can go access them and do whatever I want with them? But if that goes down, I have the pictures on my laptop or on a portable hard drive or on another website. Is that sort of the example that you're giving on a larger scale?
Right, absolutely. So if you have pictures that you don't want to lose, you would keep them in Dropbox, and you would keep a backup copy in Google, so that independent of the cloud service provider, you will be able to have access to that data. Cloud service brokerages do the exact same thing. Instead of locking you into a single cloud service provider, it gives you the ability to have a backup in different cloud service providers. And you can have a single management portal like Cloudcuity that allows you to have backups.
This is Central Standard on 89.3 FM, KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are Kevin Jackson, Vice President and General Manager of NJVC Cloud Services. He's the author of the book GovCloud 2. He's calling us from Virginia. Joe Turney of Mzuzu, a cloud services company, is also here in our studios at KCUR. We have a lively discussion here. You can write in at centralstandard@kcur.org, as John did. He says, could you have your guests address issues pertaining to federal security standards, such as FISMA or NIST or the FedRAMP program that may be required for cloud services? You address some of these regulatory issues in your book there, Kevin. Talk about federal security standards and how the cloud shapes up to that.
Yes, absolutely. The National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, it was charged with the responsibility of establishing definitions and security standards for cloud computing. The actual security standards were issued under what's called the Federal Risk Assessment and Management Program, or FedRAMP. What that does is lays out specific security controls to meet the different levels of information security management, or Federal Information Security Management Act, which is called FISMA, either low, moderate, or high. The level of security required is driven by the sensitivity of the data, and that in turn dictates the type and number of security controls that need to be implemented in the cloud. So FedRAMP today addresses what's known as FISMA low and FISMA moderate requirements. And there are cloud service providers today that meet both FISMA low and FISMA moderate requirements. I'm talking about public clouds. There are private cloud providers that can meet FISMA high requirements as well. In fact, the U.S. intelligence community is developing cloud, a private community cloud, at the FISMA high level.
We're going to talk about the difference between public and private clouds briefly here, but right now we're going to go to Dean in Lee's Summit. Dean, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes, this is Dean.
All right, Dean, go ahead.
I kind of have a different perspective on cloud computing. I'm an IT professional, and I have a number of clients that we do websites for and provide accounting software and that sort of thing. And a few of them have had some bad experiences with companies like Salesforce and other cloud computing companies because of their lack of lack of flexibility, not being able to with those companies generally, what you see is what you get. If you want modifications or if you want their software to behave in a different manner, usually it's extremely difficult to get any changes made or something like that. I think for some clients, for some customers, it's a pretty cost-effective way of doing things. But if you have a company that's rather specialized or has unique requirements, then a lot of times a cloud computing situation just may not work for them.
Thank you very much, Dean. That's one of the common misconceptions and common questions. It's not customizable enough. The cloud is too open and not customizable enough for existing infrastructure at some organizations. Government would be a big one. Kevin Jackson.
Right, absolutely. One thing is that the cloud service provider typically delivers rather narrow solution sets. And this goes again to the fact that the business model is 180 degrees out from what's typical. In the past, a government agency would basically look at its own requirements and release its requirements as a tender, and then multiple offerors would propose how they would meet those requirements. In cloud computing, it's exactly the opposite. A cloud service provider will identify the customer set they want to service, and they will design a very narrow solution to meet that customer set. And that, once again, goes back to scalability. So they would package their offering as a commodity. So a large agency or enterprise will typically have to use more than one provider in order to meet its needs and requirements. They can't just go to Salesforce. They may need to use Salesforce.com and Azure, as well as Google, to meet their needs and requirements.
Thank you very much for that. The difference between public and private cloud. Joe Tierney.
Well, public cloud is when you consume these cloud computing services from a third-party entity. The private cloud is when you set these servers up on-site, very similar to how, you know, the current status quo works.
Similar to the current firewalled network in a regular traditional OS-based
Correct.
IT infrastructure.
Buy more servers, buy more software.
So Google Apps would be public, services. And then something else behind a firewall would be an example of something that was private.
Correct. I think the example Kevin gave earlier is perfect, where the intelligence community is building its own community cloud, which is essentially a private cloud for that specific community.
Let's go to Joe in KC Mo. Joe, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello.
Hello, Joe.
Just had a few points. I'll be brief and quick. When you keep your own data, do you have to read a service agreement and stay on top of SLAs, et cetera? In other words, you play by the vendor's rules to access your data. Secondly, comparing storing your data with a vendor and storing your money in a bank is not a valid comparison. Cloud computing vendors are not regulated in the same way that banks are, FISMA notwithstanding, respectfully. Storage is cheap, and the cost of technology is always, always, always declining. And last point, keeping multiple copies of your data is never a bad practice. And I'll listen to the comments off the air. Thank you.
Joe did not like Kevin's example of your bank. Talk about that, Kevin.
Sure, absolutely. In the early days of banking, they weren't regulated either. We're in the early days of cloud computing. And as I said earlier, the laws are really behind the technology. I believe in the not-too-distant future, you will have more and more regulations built around cloud computing, specifically for that reason.
And what types of regulations would we see regarding data now that it's becoming more commoditized? Joe Tierney?
Well, I think first to the caller's question, I mean, the nice thing is that you do have choice. Especially for personal data. If you want to take the time to build out a server at home and keep it there, you know, more power to you. If you're a leader in a government organization or in a business, you know, you have a duty to do things as cost-effectively as possible. So if the cloud vendor can match the availability, the disaster recovery that you can do on your own at less cost, well, then that needs to be evaluated. Can you repeat that question you had again?
No, I think you answered it adequately. Okay. Let's move on to how businesses can get involved in moving in cloud services. And Kevin, how can the governments push into a cloud service infrastructure, entice businesses to follow suit?
Well, the agility that's afforded by being able to purchase commodity services from a marketplace, especially from a broker portal like CloudQT.com, really enables enterprises, both government enterprises and commercial enterprises, to more effectively manage their information technology needs and requirements and align them to their business needs and requirements. It's quicker, it's faster, it's cheaper, but it actually does require a much broader understanding of the technology and the business needs and requirements.
What's the latest wide-ranging government initiative in the push toward cloud computing? What's happening as we speak that we should be looking out for there, Kevin Jackson?
So the shared services mandate, where any agency that has a new requirement actually has to check with other agencies before they can build it themselves. The second is the data center consolidation, where agencies can no longer build single-purpose data centers without checking to make sure that maybe less other data centers are available to meet their needs and requirements. The third thing is really this cloud brokerage. If you were following the federal government, you'll see that the Defense Information Systems Agency, the General Services Administration, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Centers for Disease Control, and the Department of Homeland Security are all looking towards cloud services brokerage as a way of really speeding up their adoption of cloud computing. In fact, the CIO of the Department of Homeland Security stated that cloud brokerage is really the only effective way for them to leverage cloud computing in an efficient and effective manner. So you will see more and more requirements for cloud brokerage.
Joe Turney, what's happening in the private sector as we speak?
Sure. I think companies are figuring out that, you know, cloud computing is something different. You know, IT used to be something that we were told how to use. You know, the CIO gave every employee a Dell computer and a BlackBerry and said, here you go. Now we have people bringing in their mobile devices. They're bringing in their own applications, and that creates interesting challenges. So we have to reevaluate, you know, who are our strategic vendors? What's our application portfolio look like? Where can we leverage cloud computing? Where should we still do things on site?
We'll continue to try to get a 30,000-foot view of what's happening in the cloud here on Central Standard. We've been talking about the government's role in the move to cloud computing and the potential implications in both the public and private sector. Our guests are Kevin Jackson, Vice President and General Manager of NJVC Cloud Services. He's author of the book GovCloud 2. Thank you, Kevin, for joining us.
Thank you.
And we also have Joe Tierney of Umzuzu, whose voice you just heard. It's a cloud service company specializing in Google apps. Thank you for joining us, Joe.
Thank you, Jabalani.
And you can find today's show as well as other archive shows, podcasts, and a lot more at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow when we find out what it's like to be lonely in KC. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with help from Danny Alexander. Up to Date is next with Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II and Kevin Yoder. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.